Do you want me to sit there?
No, I think we're okay. Okay, so today is April 17th, 2014. This is the third interview with Allison Sewell. Again, we're here inside Memorial Library. We're going to be talking about the Capitol protests in 2011, and my name is Troy Reeves with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Allison, again, for sound quality purposes, could you say your name and spell your last name?
My name's Allison Sewell, S-E-W-E-L-L.
Excellent. I am going to slide it even closer.
Okay.
Try not to drop it. All right, Allison, you have done yeoman's work. It looks like you have yourself some notes written down. And you want to start with something that happened even before the protests, and that's your involvement in the acronym CAPE. Is that
yes.
Where you want to start?
Yeah.
All right, so maybe start by letting us know what CAPE stands for and then why it's important, why you feel it's important for this oral history.
Okay, well, so CAPE initially stood for a coalition for, I think it was Coalition for Affordable Public Education. But really it was a group of faculty and grads and even community members from what I remember, the stories of how it was initially conceived. And it was a coalition because there were people from the TAA who were involved with CAPE as well, community members involved with CAPE, people from profs, so faculty members involved in other shared governance organizations on campus. And so that's where the coalition part came from. But in my first year here at grad school, 2009, at that time, I got involved in it because my advisor, Joe Solomons, but he wasn't my advisor at the time, but he was a faculty member, was involved in this group. And another grad student, Mike Olson, was involved in this group. He was a grad student in German. And I asked a lot of questions to Mike once I got involved with the TAA that same first semester here. I was asking him all these questions about how things got to be the way that they were and how, how UW compared to other institutions and where things were heading. And a lot of my questions were also like about larger, just basics, how the larger political context affects education, higher education specifically. So Mike knew a good deal about this, but kept saying that he knew about it from CAPE, from talk discussions in CAPE. Mike was also in this group of guys I played shuffleboard with that I talked about in the first session. So he asked me if I was interested in coming to a gathering, and I didn't even really know what it was or anything, but I went. And my involvement in CAPE was largely just listening. I very rarely said anything. I just basically got to listen to faculty who have been thinking about these issues, living through these changes in higher education throughout their careers. There were other grad students involved as well, and they were all grad students who were actively involved in making change at in different levels of higher education and environmental policies. And so people who were really activists in the sense that I was didn't even know really anything about activists other than what I learned about hippies and that they were maybe activists. So at that time, that was kind of how I started to understand a lot of really fine details about the different levels of people that are in, that all kind of decisions at different levels are, can make changes for a lot of people at the bottom, and also understanding. So like what the role of administration is, what the role of ASM is, what the role of one change in, so like us getting tuition remission as graduate students, like what that meant financially for the institution and what that means for us now as grad students trying to get a pay raise. Like how do those mechanics work? How do you think about a big problem like that? And a lot of, I left every meeting with more questions, but also, like I said, I just kind of listened. And that's really how, that's how I knew what collective bargaining was. That's how I understood how grad student workers were different than faculty in the sense that we had something recognized as a union, just also kind of how all those little pieces fit together to kind of explain why I felt the way I did, basically being in that group helped shape how I viewed education when it was announced that there wouldn't be collective bargaining and what that meant for me, thinking about myself, other grads, and also just for other people, because that was, the whole thing was about affordable education, affordable public education. And as someone who has over $30,000 in undergraduate student loans, that's an issue that I really would like to spend time in my life working on. Because it's something that's still an issue. And unfortunately, I feel like my generation is like, we're all kind of waking up at some point thinking like, oh, crap, we don't want it to be this way, but I don't really know what's been changed. So yeah, I just wanted to get that on the record that I basically was sitting in these meetings for years, for the, you know, 2 years leading up to the announcement of this, kind of absorbing how these other people who had much more experience with this stuff, how they were thinking about stuff and talking about stuff. So the language they were using, the,
So thank you for that. So when we last left off, I think we were at the end of the long day where you tried to testify.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if your notes there, if you want to pick up from your notes there, if there's anything else that you want to say about that day that maybe you were reminded of and have jotted down. I'm going to give you some space here, I guess, to sort of decide where you want to go from here.
Okay. Well, yeah, I had written down actually a kind of correction to the February 14th, that day where I remember that I hadn't gone into the building to deliver the Valentines, but I was actually talking to a colleague of mine the other day about that day, because I did participate in the march. I don't remember where it started. I think the TAA office, but maybe Library Mall, but we marched up State Street, and I remember she brought up seeing me there, because actually the I Heart UW posters are still hanging up in our grad student lounge from when I put them there in 2011 before the protests happened, when we were creating these Valentines initially as part of this bigger campaign. I hung those, and we were having a discussion about how no one cleans up our lounge, basically, because those were still hanging on the board from 2011. From the January is probably when I posted them. But then she mentioned seeing me that day at the march, and I remembered, oh yeah, there was a march. So I now have, you know, thinking about it, I remember walking up with a big group of people, mostly TAA people, but other people I'm sure were there too. But there were already tons of people at the Capitol. So I've seen some things where they talk about like the TAA started the protests, but I mean, at least from my memory of that day, we had planned this march, we had planned that action to go deliver these Valentines. So we just executed the plan exactly as we had planned, but it had a totally different meaning than what it initially was conceived to be. And when we got up to the Capitol, there were already people there, but there wasn't, from what I remember, like, there was just groups of people. Like, there were clusters of people who were clearly all from the same union or from people who would come up together, but we all came up, and that was just a really great experience to come up and just be in this group that was self-organized in the sense that we all like planned to go up there together. And I remember I stayed outside the Capitol that day, and just that was the first time I'd seen signs. I was like, oh, people have signs here. That's a good idea. You know, I don't even know how, I think maybe we had a couple signs, but we weren't, or I hadn't thought about the significance that signs would play in all this. That very first day, I was just kind of observing all that stuff. And then, as I said last time, I had to go to class or something, but I left shortly after that because I had some other commitment that I had to be back on campus for. And then the next time I was involved with anything was really, I just kind of stayed in contact with people from the TAA after that march and followed the news very, very closely. But a couple days after that was when I tried to testify. And I think the only thing I wanted to add to that was I just wanted to read what I was gonna say. I didn't have like something really written out, but I knew I decided in my waiting to testify that I wanted to read a quote. And it's a quote from Walter Benjamin, who is an author, a German author. He was killed in Spain trying to flee from the National Socialist regime, and I'd just taken a literature course on him. I've only taken like two literature courses in my time as a grad student here. But the quote really struck me at the time because it was an interesting way of thinking about things. And then I thought of it again as I was in my waiting of what I was going to say. And people had smartphones, so I was able to just ask, like, hey, can I use your phone and look up this quote? It's one of his most famous quotes. But so what I was planning to say was just that I was Allison Sewell. I'm a member of AFT Local 33220, and I teach German and Dutch at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And then I was just going to read the quote and say that I was here to oppose the budget repair bill, and that I was here just like other people voicing this concern. And the quote is, I'll read it in German and then I can tell you what it means. So it says, Marx sagt, die Revolutionen sind die Lokomotiven der Weltgeschichte, aber vielleicht ist dem gänzlich anders. Vielleicht sind die Revolutionen der Griff des in diesem Zuge reitenden Menschengeschlechts nach der Notbremse. And that means that Marx says that revolutions are the locomotives of world history, but perhaps it's completely different. Perhaps revolutions are the grip of humanity on the brake as they're in this train that's traveling forward. And why I wanted to read that to this particular finance committee was because, you know, there was basically a lot of people who were all there, and it would seem like, and it did seem like, that people were just revolting, that people were really like protesting, upset. But if you think about it, that it's not, they're not just doing it, you know, if you think about it from a perspective that, you know, they're doing it to create history or that creates history, but rather that they're doing it for a reason, and that reason was to say, hey, stop, we don't want to go that way, like we want to go a different way, or we don't think we should be going that way. It's kind of like pausing for a second, and also again reminding, kind of contextualizing these people's reactions, my reaction, other people's reactions, as something that, you know, that's happening for a reason. And there's so many people here that are saying this, like, listen to us, please, because that's why we're here. And that's really all I'd planned to say. It was only 2 minutes, I think, is how much we read. And then I ended last time with how that experience, how I didn't actually get to testify, and then I kind of just waited, and that was the first night people started sleeping there, but I didn't sleep there. I went home.
So maybe I'll hit some of my questions here, and then if that, you know, feel free to obviously.
Uh-huh.
So I guess then, you talked about, last time we talked, even before the recorder was on, that neither of us have a smartphone. You just mentioned that to get this quote, you asked somebody who had a smartphone. So my question that I try to ask people is the idea of social media and the influence on the protest. So I don't think it's a moot question to you, because even though you don't have a smartphone, I'm assuming you have some interaction with social media.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you could comment from your perspective, mm-hmm, of social media and the protests.
Well, the next point on my little list was actually had to do with that, in the sense that I was on Facebook, and a faculty member in my department, Rob Howe, friends with him on Facebook, and he posted, it was either that Saturday or Sunday, but it was a weekend day, and he posted, like, it's the weekend, back to the Capitol. I basically was like, that's weird, like, it's a weekend, and he, you know, but he's leaving his house and he's going up to the Capitol on the weekend. And then people were commenting on his post, and he basically said that he'd been there every day or almost every day. And I was like just checking that while I was at my apartment by myself. And so I ate lunch after reading that, and then I decided I was just gonna go check it out, because I was like, oh, well, Rob says there's something going on up there, so maybe there are people still up there. So in response to reading his quote and kind of feeling this like, wow, that's my faculty member who's going up there to, you know, and he is affected by this, but he's not in a union, but his TAs are, and so are a lot of other people. He knows his wife's a public school teacher. And so, so then I went up, again, I don't remember which day it was, but it was one of those first weekend days. And I just, like, there were people just walking around the square in the road, just the whole road was closed, and there were just people walking around. And so I just started walking around, and it was like snow flurrying, and there was so many different groups of people there. I mean, there are a lot of people that were unidentifiable, like myself, who were just kind of like random people, but then there were definitely people with signs, people that were holding banners. So yeah, I don't know how long I walked around, but I walked around until, I think until I got cold, until I got too cold. And then I went home, but that was like, that's just an example of something that, again, I can't really say why I did it other than that I saw that and was like, and wanted to go see what was there and why he was going there, and then just got involved in that way. But I didn't really do anything other than just participate. Other than that example, I mean, I followed all the posts that were being made by the TAA on Facebook, and then also like they were updating their website, and people were sending news articles all around, like, you know, just posting stuff. So I guess it was mostly through Facebook, but then also email, which I don't know if that's considered social media, but I mean, email in the sense that it would be like a email thread with like a posting about something and what do we do about this, or what's, you know, this next thing was like, this next move will maybe take in, how do we react? And so kind of following the situation, definitely like through the internet and not as much like through face-to-face conversations.
Okay. Did you follow, so you followed through sort of social media and email threads.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try to follow what was going on through, I guess for lack of a better word, the mainstream media?
Yeah, sure. I remember a girlfriend of mine from high school, who at the time was in law school in Illinois, she sent me a clip of Rachel Maddow, who had done this coverage of what was happening. And it was a really great piece. It was a really interesting take on kind of what was happening. But I was definitely following how news outlets, like large ones, but also local, like how my hometown, like how people would be like, oh, that's where Allison lives. Like she lives, you know, like how they were responding, what they were hearing about stuff. And I get my news mostly through NPR, and then I read the local, like the Wisconsin State Journal and those types of mainstream media outlets. And that's what I meant by like articles that were being passed around. They were almost all like news articles from various outlets and videos that people had taken. Or
did you ever see any sort of disconnect on how NPR and the Journal was covering the protests as opposed to what either you were seeing or what you were hearing from some of your TAA cohorts or faculty who were actually there at the Capitol?
Well, I think there's always disconnect between different news sources, but I don't remember thinking anything, and I'm not remembering now, anything that was like one point that particularly stood out. A lot of times it's just things that are inaccurate in the sense like maybe a timeline, something, or a generalized statement that maybe I know more detail about. So when I hear it generalized, I'm like, hey, that's not really how it happened. But nothing I can think of at the time that was really off.
Okay. So I think you answered this the last time, or maybe even this time, but let's officially get it on the record. So this is spring of 2011 in terms of the actual term.
Mm-hmm.
So you were still taking classes,
mm-hmm.
and you were teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how were you balancing sort of taking classes, teaching, and then also trying to, whatever you consider your involvement to be, being involved in what was going on?
Okay, so that's actually like the last two points I have on here.
Okay.
So,
do the other points build on that, or do you want to?
Yeah, I mean, well, basically, it was, I never let anything with that stuff slip, with the exception of the day that I testified. I got home so late, and I emailed Joe, who was the professor for the only class I had the next day, and I just told him where I'd been, and that I had to teach in the morning, but then I was going to go home and go to sleep, and that I had the readings done, but, you know, I was tired, and I really didn't think I would be very useful in class that day. And he said, okay. And I didn't go to class that day. I also never miss class or never really, I mean, this was something where, like, I wonder what his reaction, I still never asked him, like, what he thought when he read that, as in, like, oh, she doesn't feel like coming to class today, because that's kind of what I said, like, I don't feel like being there today, I'm not coming, because I'm sure he has days he doesn't feel like being there, but he has to be there, and I should have been there, but at the same time, I just wasn't mentally and physically, I wasn't feeling like going to historical linguistics that day, so I stayed at home, but other than that, I don't think I let anything slide, because you can't. So, I mean, the points that I had written down, they build on that in the sense that basically after a couple other things that I was involved in, I just completely dropped out of being involved. I continued to follow what was happening with the protests, but, I mean, after that weekend, sometime during that second week, so the week after that Valentine's Day week, I think that's when it was, but in any case, it was the day that it may have even been later, but finally, it was the day it passed, that the budget repair bill passed. I got a text from a colleague of mine who was also a friend of mine. He was in a meeting with Joe, who was his advisor as well, and during that meeting, Joe got a phone call from someone saying, like, they're voting on this, like, they figured out a way to vote on this, like, we need get down here. Like, it was another faculty member, I think, or something, but I don't remember exactly. I was told, I just don't remember. So in any case, Joe explained the situation to Joshua, and they just left their meeting together and just went straight to the Capitol, the two of them. So I got a text from Joshua as they were en route saying that he and Joe were going to the Capitol. The bill was being voted on, which, reading that, I was like, how can that be? Because there was all this, like, the senators left, and then there was, like, how, you know, can't vote on it in this particular thing. There's all this stuff, everybody was just, for whatever reasons, they hadn't voted on it yet, right? So reading that, I was kind of like, what? What are you talking about? And then Joshua also said, and Joe says your meeting's canceled, because I was supposed to meet with him like 2 hours or 3 hours after that. So it was kind of a text that was Joshua just updating me, but mostly also conveying on Joe's behalf that he and I would not be meeting that day. And so then when I got that text, I was in Van Nuys. I read the text out loud to the other colleague of mine that was in the office with me. His name was Ryan Carroll. And we were like, well, let's get down there. Like, come on. Like, the only reason I was hanging out there was to meet with Joe later. But if he wasn't there, then let's go down there. So then Ryan and I went to the Capitol. But by the time Ryan and I got there, the doors were locked and they weren't letting any other people in. So then he and I just stood outside for a while, and we sang with people, and we're just out there, like, right, we were on the part, like, right, I don't know how long it had been that they'd been locked, but we ended up, like, right on the steps, like, on that upper, like, right where the doors were, basically, but, and we stayed there for a while, again, just talking with people, and singing, or just listening to people, trying to get updates, like, you know, everybody's, like, here's what I know, but then it seemed like nobody really knew anything at that point. And it was pretty clear that nobody else was getting in after, like, over an hour of trying to get in. So then Ryan and I both had our backpacks, and we both were like, we're going home. Our backs hurt from holding all of our books and our stuff. But when we were leaving, I saw Joe's bike, and he had left all of his lights on, and he hadn't locked it or anything. He had just, like, I recognized his bike because I know what his bike looks like, but it was strange to just see it there, and I'm sure he either didn't realize his lights were on, or maybe even someone turned them on, who knows, but I said, like, oh, that's his bike, so he must be in there, like, he must have made it in there, so I turned off all of the lights on his bike, and then I wrote a note that just said, like, thank you for your support, and Ryan and I signed it, and we stuck it in the, like, break, uh, the basically the brake cords, the brake chain, or they're not chains, but the brake cords that were on his bike. And to this day, he has never said anything about that to me, but the note is hanging in his office. So he clearly got it. And he, the way he decorates is by just like taping things with scotch tape up on his wall. And at some point, well after that, 2012 or 2013 sometime, I noticed like, oh, hey, that's my note. But he's never said anything to me about it. After that, I just went home. And then that same week, I think, but at some point we were supposed to strike. As part of the TA wanted TAs to strike. And I didn't because I taught a class that was 3 times a week. And that class was, I taught a section that was 3 times a week. And it was part of a, like the whole class, the regular class met 5 times a week. So if you're in one of these condensed sections, you're kind of at a disadvantage because you literally have 10 minutes less per week with your students. Mm-hmm. But then you also, like, there are certain... So basically, if you teach 5 days a week, you really have, like, the day of the quiz just for the quizzes. And you maybe even have, like, some time during the class before the quiz to actually just do review. Whereas if you teach the condensed, just... It's a longer time period, but you only meet 3 times a week. You really have to use every single class session to actually be like reviewing information and covering it at least once in class. And I never feel comfortable testing my students on something if we've never done anything with it in class. We either have to at least talk about it or do an activity where the vocabulary or the structure is practiced in some way. I mean, I always give homework for stuff. So they've, in any case, the day that we were supposed to strike was like the day I had with my students before a quiz, and I felt like I would have been putting my students at a big disadvantage if I didn't hold class, because they would have had to take that quiz, and I didn't feel like my students, like, that this was helpful to them by not having the opportunity to come in and practice using these things with each other and practice doing the writing activities and stuff that what I couldn't just give them and have them do. Some of my colleagues like held their class in a different location, or they did something like, oh, we're just gonna have like a class party that day or something. And then a couple people like just canceled class and said, this is why I'm canceling class, right? But what I did instead was say that we're having class and that we would take the first part of that class to answer questions. If any of you guys had questions about what was happening here and what the TA's involvement is, if any of your other TAs for classes like maybe are striking that day and you want to ask about it. So, and we did that. We talked, I don't know how long, but I remember which one of my students it was that asked a question. She just basically said, like, I don't understand how this budget bill, like, is affecting TAs here. Like, does it affect your pay? And I was like, no, not exactly. And so we kind of just covered the basics of how I understood that with my students. And it wasn't very long, but I felt like I would have been putting my students at a disadvantage. So it's, again, going back to your question about how I balanced those things with also my involvement. In that case, I made a decision that that I guess I didn't feel like it was really a big enough thing. Like, if we would have been striking, like, until this is addressed or something. But it was like just striking on that one day, and I guess I just thought, oh, but then the next time we meet, they have to take this quiz, and they're going to be at a huge disadvantage. And the other classes that met 5 days a week were actually able to meet 1 or 2 times before that. So I just made that call not to strike, and I remember people in my department kind of being like, that's weird. Like, why aren't you striking? Like, I thought you would strike. And then I just explained briefly what I just said to you. And then I wrote a blog post for the blog Sifting and Winnowing that, I wrote one because, some of the people who can like have control over that blog or did at that time, are involved with CAPE, and they had sent stuff out over the our CAPE listserv saying like we're interested in some like different perspectives on this. So I offered to write a blog post. But other than that, that was pretty much it. I really just stopped. I didn't go to any TAA meetings. I didn't go to any events. I continued to get everything, continued to read stuff. But I really just focused on trying to balance, like trying to do my schoolwork and try and teaching, and that was pretty much, I guess I really didn't think that me going and being in the Capitol or me not having my class, or I guess I wasn't really seeing the impact of my involvement, because it kind of hit me that it was like really big. Like it's a really big thing. And also I just, the idea that it just didn't make any sense to me, and it was the first time growing up as like a white middle class girl in a white suburban, mostly white suburban town with, I mean, yeah, I mean, we also like never talked about, I mean, basically it was the first time that there was a really concrete example to me of something that just really didn't make any sense to me, but I was like hearing people either in person or like reading their quotes or watching them on TV talk about it as if it was a good idea. And it's like, but this is clearly not a good idea. This doesn't make any sense. And it was this weird realization that there really are like people who live in different realities, and that sometimes that can result in like changes being made at a political and at a political level, and like changes in policy, changes in the way things work. And even if I could argue as and create the best, you know, statement for why this really wasn't the best thing for myself, for my fellow graduate student workers, and for other people, it really wouldn't do anything. And I don't think it actually would have convinced anybody or done anything. It was just kind of a weird realization about the way that things work in the world, and it was by being here and involved in this, in the protests, and in that experiencing all of that, that kind of I don't want to say it made me cynical, but it was kind of like I understand those things a lot better now. And I think that was definitely the first time that I ever really like started to think about that.
Is it maybe less cynical, maybe more pragmatic?
Yeah, I guess maybe just understanding. Yeah, coming to understand. Well, it was a shift in kind of what I thought was how things worked and how things, and so coming to understand it in a way that was like, oh wait, this is how the world really is, you know. And that shifts now every day. And I feel like since that time, I've thought about that, I've kind of questioned a lot more of how things work and why things are the way they are. Because, you know, I knew the TAA had bargained to get our tuition remission, right, and our healthcare, and it was kind of like, I didn't really understand how important being able to do that was, because I just, you know, I knew I had this, and I learned after I joined the TAA that it was because of bargaining. And it wasn't even that long before I got here, you know, and it just seemed absurd to me that people like wouldn't be able to work for that, like wouldn't be able to have those conversations with their employers and actually be able to, like, why wouldn't you want to be able to do that with your employees? To hear what they want, because, yeah, it just seemed like also creating this, like, reinforcing that some people really do believe that it's like, no, there's people on top, there's people on bottom, and, like, there's people who say what, you know, this is how things go. And I just didn't understand, like, even in companies or especially in institutions, why you wouldn't want to be collaborating, why you wouldn't be communicating, and why you wouldn't want to be working so that everybody's happy. So My balloon burst, maybe. And my reaction to that was to just pull away. And I didn't do anything with the TAA until 2013. I wasn't involved in any way. And I stopped, I mean, CAPE basically it met some, I guess, people met, but continued into this day, like, following these types of things in the news, but as far as me actively doing things or me wanting to, like, go check things out or be involved, I guess I haven't done that.
So I'll ask this question directly, although I think you just answered it. How involved or were you involved in the recall effort then?
Yeah, not at all. I signed a petition, but that was it. And I would, whenever something would come out that Walker had done, like a reason why he was being recalled, or maybe like a news piece, maybe I'd post it on my Facebook wall or something. But I wasn't involved as in going out to get signatures or even really like talking about it with people, really. I signed a petition that somebody was having people sign, yeah. And that was it. And I voted to recall him.
Did you watch the news or hang out with folks that night when the results started coming in? And
I don't remember. I don't think so. I don't remember.
Okay. So, you have your notes there. I'm wondering if there's any other memories or stories about the protests that either you had jotted down and want to get on the record or maybe has come to mind since we've been talking.
Well, we hit everything that was on my list.
Okay.
And, I mean, I guess I'll just add that it was also like the semester that I was working on my master's. And so that was another like kind of, I had to work on a paper I'd already written and then like expand upon it. And so that May is when I got my master's. And I think that was definitely like something that kind of feeling the pressure from that, but also feeling like I could kind of justify my lack of involvement by saying like, I need to work on this. but all that stuff I mentioned earlier was kind of what I was feeling emotionally, even if when people asked me why I wasn't, like where I'd been or why I wasn't there, I would just say like, because I'm working on my master's. Yeah, and that's pretty much the extent of my involvement. And as I said, the TAA, like I didn't do anything with the TAA after that for a long time. And I got off their email list somehow. I didn't request to be, but I didn't make an effort to get back on. And it wasn't until last year, it was the start of this school year, so fall of 2013, we hadn't had a steward in the TAA since then, because me and Joshua and Ben were the stewards and none of us got back involved with the TAA after the protests. I mean, I did sign back up with the TAA after, so I must have gone to one meeting, because after when they started the new structure, you had to sign up to be a member and give them your bank account to have your dues taken out and stuff. So I did do that. And I think I probably did talk to other people in my department who I knew were members before and was like, even like I'd signed them up the first time and then saying, well, I know you already filled this out, but because of Act 10, you have to sign back up if you want to be a member. But that was also pretty like saddening to see. I mean, and even now, like the TAA is We just had a meeting this week, and there were four of us at the meeting, and it's just different because we don't have as many people involved, and if there was a reason to not want people to be organized themselves in a big group, that the restrictions for membership, and also for collecting dues, and we had to fire our staff members. I mean, these were more recent things, but I think that all of that also played a role in why I wasn't as involved in the recall and other stuff that basically happened afterwards, because it was just a lot of chaos and a lot of trying to figure out how to feel strong again. And we've never figured out still how to do that. And we'll be hosting events this semester and try and get people there. But at least in my department, I know people in my department thank me for my involvement with the TAA and for keeping them informed and for representing them and speaking on their behalf. But those people, though, are not any more inclined to participate and be a part of the culture. It's like, oh, I have my representative. I'm going to trust her to do it all. But that's not the same as having actually, like, everybody feel like it's their group. They are a part of the group, too. So, yeah, the fall of 2013, though, so start of the school year, we still didn't have a steward. And so I said, I'll do it. So then I started attending meetings again, the GMM meetings and the Stewards Council meetings, and I got back on all the lists. And so now I'm actively involved in the TAA again. This school year is really the first one in a while.
And I think you mentioned in maybe the first interview that led to the TAA's involvement in the seg fees for what they were going to do with recreation.
Yeah, well, that was, so the first seg fee campaign was before the protests in 2011.
Right.
And I think that also experiencing being here for that, that's kind of what I, when I mentioned about feeling strong and feeling like that we really could do stuff, and that students, other grad student workers really did think of the TAA as a group that advocated for them. And I feel that we still are, but I don't feel like that's what other grad student workers think or feel. And part of that is not because there's a change, it's because you have turnover. You have new cohorts every year, and, you know, people leaving or moving other places as they're finishing their degrees, or, you know, so it's, with each new cohort, you need to reestablish what that means. And basically every cohort, starting in, so the last two, 2012, 2013, and now, you know, so those two cohorts, like, didn't really get that because they came in and their experience was a post Act 10 environment. And so I'm definitely thinking about that first seg fee campaign when I'm talking about, like, kind of feeling strong. And then in contrast to that, this last seg fee campaign, we didn't have a campaign. We voted, the membership of the TAA voted to not take a position on the issue because we didn't think we could win any campaign, because we didn't have staff, we didn't have resources, part of this was also when the referendum to increase segregated fees this time around, that came up, that they announced that they were going to vote on it just very shortly before the vote was. It was, I think, about a month or month and a half before. But I definitely, I think, like, there was a lot of just, like, outrage, like, man, they're trying to do this again. Can we do anything? And then there was this kind of sitting back and us realizing, like, we really can't. And we need to figure out how we can use, I mean, we ended up turning that into part of our campaign for a wage increase, saying that we just want a wage increase, but this referendum just passed saying that our seg fees are going to increase by basically the same amount that we just won for a raise. So now our raise is moot. And, you know, it, or it doesn't mean anything. So it's still, it's part of our campaign now, but it's hard because I also feel in the leadership, like, I said this at our meeting this week, I was the only person in the meeting. There was a girl came who I was so happy to see because I recognized her, and I know she's been here as long or longer than me, but she was the first person I've seen at one of these STUCO meetings that's been there for as long as I have. And it was a weird feeling of me, that I've really been here a long time and or longer than a lot of people that are really active right now. And I just don't feel that we're really as organized as we should be if we're really, but we're all, I mean, that's the point of having staff members that we no longer have, because they weren't teaching and researching and doing classes and trying to be involved in this. That, you know, they were our staff members from AFT that were here. And I guess it's I guess the rhetoric hasn't really changed either about, like, I think it's a lot of just people kind of saying, well, this is how it is. I'm just happy I get a stipend. I'm just happy I have a monthly salary. So that makes it hard to get people to push for change if they don't think it needs to be changed, or if they'd like the change but don't want to ruffle any feathers to get it.
So I want to give you space to answer this, although I think you did pretty well a couple of questions ago. So what do you think the protest either meant to you or did for or to you?
Well, I think the protest showed me that you should still fight if you're upset about something. You should still, I wasn't discouraged because the bill actually passed, or because Walker wasn't recalled. Like, those things, I guess, they weren't necessarily discouraging to me. It was more that we had to fight so hard, even to, like, get... The fact that we even had to fight that hard, that was what was discouraging to me. Seeing, like, really how intense people were protesting. And by intense, I mean just from so many different people doing so many different things from so many different angles. Really smart things, too. People really... like trying to solve a problem, and yet there was as much effort to try and get around that, right? And not allow for that. So I think that's what it kind of showed me, that, or made me feel that. And I mean, I'm, as far as what it, well, I guess that's it. I mean, it meant that I got to be involved with something and see, like, firsthand what it's like to be involved in something that's like a movement, right? So now I kind of look at, when I read about other protests or other events, I think about them differently because I have my own memories of being involved in this one. I'm not afraid to participate and stuff, and I think maybe next time that there is something that I feel like is worth protesting, I would like to be able to give more for a longer period of time, because I do kind of feel like if everybody would have had the same reaction I did, then there wouldn't have been anything at all. And but that's how I reacted at that time, and maybe I'm just saying that now because nothing actually happened, right? Because we, the bill actually passed and he wasn't recalled. But, I mean, I can see maybe if, like, Walker runs for president, or if there's anything, any other local things, or even stuff at the administrative, just little levels. I feel like I have a better understanding now of how to go about organizing those things, and... yeah.
Allison, is there anything else you want to add?
Nope.
All right. So I think that wraps up our oral history. So this concludes the third and final oral history interview with Allison Sewell. Allison, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.